Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench on this Saturday, the last Saturday before Christmas. Hope you've gotten your letter written off to Santa and you're on the nice list. We'll find out if Ryan's on the nice list very, very shortly. I'd have my doubts about that. But coming up on the Big Red Bench tonight, we are going to wrap up all today's action, on today's Premier League action. We're going to talk to Cork City FC chairman Declan Carey about the future of the FBI. Reaction from Cork's win over Kerry last night in the Munster Hurling League in Mallow. And we're also going to talk to motorcyclist Ray Casey about his incredible year in 2019 and his plans for 2020 and more besides as well. So a lot to come between now and 7 o'clock. Listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. I'm Rory O'Hagan, Ryan Grace is Ryan Grace, and we're here until 7pm this evening. 086 8104 106, if you'd like to get in touch, or you can tweet us at Big Red Bench. Are you on the nice list, Ryan?
Actually offended that you insinuate I wouldn't be on the nice list. Like, of course, like, I'm on the nice list.
How do you,
Rory,
mean of course? That's like so immodest. Of course I'm on the nice list. Why wouldn't I be?
But I've been good all year. How couldn't I be? Well, I hope I am. You got me doubting myself now. I was fairly sure before we came
on
air. We'll find
out on Wednesday if Santa leaves you presents or a lump of coal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So lovely t-shirt, by the way.
Yeah, wearing my festive Christmas Santa t-shirt today. I wanted to replace the Big Red Bench. Well, not replace it. I just want to play Christmas songs for the entire hour. They'd be like the Big Red Bench Christmas special. But that was shot down, unsurprisingly. So unfortunately, we're going to talk sport for the next 16 minutes.
Okay.
I'm sure we're all delighted to hear that. But yeah, busy show coming up for you between now and 7pm as well, if we ever stop talking about Christmas.
Absolutely, Roger. Plenty of action anyway. Sheffield United up to fifth in the Premier League table. Ollie McBurney's goal was enough for them to secure a 1-0 win over Brighton.
Yeah, Alan Lewis watched this one.
It's finished Brighton 0, Sheffield United 1, and Sheffield United's away record just gets better and better after both teams had goals ruled out by VAR early on. Ollie McBurney capitalised on a mistake at the back to score what would prove to be the winner. McGoldrick missed a great chance to make it 2 after the break, and O'Connell had another United goal chalked off by VAR. Brighton improved though. Graham Potter threw men forward in search of an equaliser, and Connolly went close while McGoldrick almost scored at the other end. It's now 9 unbeaten away from home from Sheffield United. They finished Brighton 0, Sheffield United 1.
Yeah, John Egan, Cork's John Egan, Greenwood legend like myself, had a goal disallowed for Sheffield United as well, who are absolutely incredible. 28 points from 18 games.
That's
a
incredible,
sensational return from a team that is newly promoted. John Egan looks the real deal as well. Solid at the back, composed, calm. Really, really good centre-half. The thing is, with that Sheffield United team, if they keep performing the way they do, you'd imagine the team would be dismantled over the summer with big clubs coming in to swoop in and take the best
players. That's always the danger, isn't it? Yeah, always.
But fantastic stuff from them as they continue to fly high.
100%. 1 point behind Chelsea. I know Chelsea are playing tomorrow, but still, great incredible stuff from them. Wolves are a point behind them in sixth. They came from behind to beat North City 2-1.
And Ian Beach was watching it.
Norwich 1, Wolves 2. What a turnaround in the second half by Wolves. They were by far the second best team in the first half. Todd Cantwell put Norwich 1-0 up before half time. And the Wolves goalkeeper, Rui Patricio, made 4 really good saves in that period to keep his side in the game. But in the second half, goals from Roman Saiz and Raul Jimenez have earned Wolves the points. That keeps Norwich firmly in the relegation zone. Norwich 1, Wolves 2.
Yeah, Norwich certainly in trouble. That's a cracking win for Wolves. And as Ryan was mentioning, a point behind Sheffield United. They're up to sixth.
Yeah, absolutely. Now elsewhere, Miguel Almiron, he finally scored for Newcastle. Finally. At the 27th time of asking to give his team a 1-0 victory over Crystal Palace.
And that's them up to the top half of the table as well. They have 25 points up to ninth after 18 games. So that's fantastic stuff from Newcastle.
Great stuff from them. Southampton, they've been replaced by Aston Villa in the relegation zone after their 3-1 victory at Villa Park. Well, Jay Rodriguez's last-minute goal sealed a 1-0 win for Burnley at Bournemouth.
Peter Hood.
Bournemouth 0, Burnley 1, and the game won in the dying seconds, courtesy of substitute Jay Rodriguez's header, which was allowed to stand after a VAR check for handball. Burnley, though, were doing what they usually do. They defended, they were tough, and it was a terse game throughout, to be fair. Game of very few chances indeed. 5 bookings in the second half. It was never as brutal as all that, but it's finished in favour of the visitors. Bournemouth 0, Burnley 1.
Yeah, cracking win for Burnley.
There you go. Now, in the early game, the half past 12 kick-off this afternoon, Everton and Arsenal played out the worst goalless draw I've ever seen.
Let's see if Shane Pennington can describe it any better.
Everton 0, Arsenal 0, and both sides' new managers watched on from the director's box. And on this showing, they'll know there's plenty of improvement needed if their respective sides are going to climb the table. In a game of very few chances, Aubameyang had the best effort, but saw his effort brilliantly saved by Pickford in the Everton goal. Whilst at the other end, Everton's best chance saw Richarlison's angle drive go narrowly wide of the right-hand post. A game that will be easily forgotten. Everton 0, Arsenal 0.
A game that will be easily forgotten. I didn't see any of this. Was it as bad as people were saying?
Oh, it was brutal. It was absolutely
terrible. Was it that bad?
The first half especially was brutal. Yeah, no, there was nothing. There was no football being played at all. I feel sorry for Ancelotti and Arteta, who had to look from the stands down at that and think, oh my God, I don't know which I'd rather be less than, you know. But yeah, Shane mentioned there, it comes after Everton, of course, have appointed Carlo Ancelotti as their manager on a 4.5-year contract. The Italian was sacked by Napoli earlier this month. He now succeeds Marco Silva, who was dismissed by Goodison Park Club on the 6th of December.
Yeah, I'm going to hear enough just briefly from Duncan Ferguson. He's been an interim charge. He's going to be part of the new backroom team as well. He's excited to be working with the Italian.
We've just had a chat there, and of course I can't wait to learn off a man like that. I mean, he's done everything, hasn't he? And then, you know, I've only took 3 games or 4 games, you know, he's took hundreds, thousands maybe. So no, I can't wait to get started Monday.
Yeah, it's a huge appointment by Everton.
That's massive. That's a big club move, absolutely.
Before we move on, just as an Arsenal fan, are you happy with Mikel Arteta's appointment?
Hard to know, Roar. It is hard to know because, I don't know, you hear all these talks about how he has the manager's vision. He has that whole kind of persona, but he obviously hasn't got the experience, or he hasn't been able to show that yet. So, yes. I don't know. I think it's might be a bit above his station at the minute. But I suppose
it's a huge gamble, isn't it?
It's a massive gamble. Now, I watched he did a press conference yesterday after he got appointed. It's about 10 or 15 minutes long. And I watched it. He's very, very charismatic and he knows all the right things to say. So he did, like, and I found myself kind of saying, oh yeah, well, he knows what he's talking about. He's obviously been at the club before. He was there under Wenger, like won trophies under Wenger. He knows kind of what the vision of the club is about and stuff. So look, in terms of that, it could hopefully work out in more of kind of a Frank Lampard way than a Ole Gunnar Solskjaer way, but you wouldn't know just because he thrived as Pep's right-hand man, but now I suppose for him to take the hot seat and have Freddie as your right-hand man, if that's the way they're going to arrange it, I mean, I don't know. I suppose time will tell.
It'll be interesting,
really.
But the atmosphere around that club is poison. I mean, like, just watching on Twitter today, Arsenal Fan TV were being chanted at by Arsenal fans saying, Arsenal Fan TV, get out of our club.
Yeah.
And a lot of the attention seems to be on them and the negative atmosphere, I suppose, they've created.
100%. And I suppose in recent weeks as well, Sky Sports have even kind of given their 2 cents and kind of saying how, exactly like you say, like how toxic they are, like if you want to use that word, how much of an influence, do they have too much influence in that club, and how much of a role did they play in the sacking of Emery in the first place? I mean, they are essentially standing outside the grounds after every week and just kind of giving out, relentlessly giving out about something. And I don't know, maybe at some point you have to draw the line a little bit. But
yeah, certainly.
There you go. Elsewhere, anyway, it's second against third in the evening kickoff as Leicester City travel to Manchester City. It's 39 minutes on the clock. It's actually 1-1, courtesy of an equaliser from Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah, we'll get an update on that one in just a bit. But Jamie Vardy had put Leicester ahead with an absolute beauty of a finish, sprinting down the left-hand side, chipping ball over the keeper at pace as well. That was a top-notch finish.
Yeah.
And his scoring run continues.
Absolutely. And then Mahrez equalising against his old club. Yeah. So sounds like it could be quite the eventful second half. Now, Liverpool are attempting to win the Club World Cup for the first time. The big one. Yeah, the big one. The Champions League holders, they're taking on Brazilian side Flamengo in the final in Doha in Qatar. It's still scoreless after 40 minutes there. Yeah, like you said, the big one. They're not playing in the Premier League this weekend because they're off.
They're playing in the big one.
Yeah, exactly. They've got eyes on a bigger prize than that. In Scotland, Celtic have extended their lead at the top of the Scottish Premiership to 5 points. Neil side battled, had a hard-fought 2-1 win against 10 men of Aberdeen. Motherwell are up to third after Jay Carl's free kick was enough to score them a 1-0 victory at managerless Kilmarnock. Hearts are 3 points adrift at the bottom of the table after Hamilton beat them 2-1, and Livingston thrashed Ross County 4-0, and St Johnstone and St Mirren played out a goalless draw. Just a real quick roar off the pitch, Ajax and Netherlands defender Daley Blind, who you'll remember from his days at Manchester United, has been diagnosed with a heart condition. He suffered dizziness during the Champions League game against Valencia on the 10th of December. The ex-Man United player, he's now 29 years old. He's missed the last two games of the year and he won't rejoin training in January as he continues his recovery, but he says he's trying to return to football as soon as possible. Yeah. So we wish him a speedy recovery, of course. Moving on anyway, in Gaelic games, Cork began their Munster Hurling League season with a comfortable victory against Kerry in Mallow yesterday evening. Final score there, 127 to 11 points.
We'll have a reaction from Kieran Kingston, the Cork boss, coming up on that just in a little bit, but that's a good win for Cork. I think it was just a lot of the younger panel involved last night, so good win for Cork again.
Yeah, good positive start. Now elsewhere, Tipperary have now lost back-to-back games in the league. The All-Ireland champions were beaten 222 to 117 by Limerick at the LIT Gaelic Grounds last night. Now today's action, we saw St Michael's defeated St Finbarr's. They were playing in the Under-21A Football Championship quarter-final this afternoon. It was a comfortable victory in the end, 415 to 18 is how that game finished. In rugby, Connacht are hosting Munster at the sports ground in the Guinness Pro 14 this evening. Munster are currently leading 16 points to 9 there. And as for yesterday evening, those who braved the cold were treated to 14 tries, no less, at the RDS last night.
Incredible stuff.
Max Deegan and Scott Penny both crossed a white wash twice as Leinster ran out 54 to 42 point winners over Ulster in the Pro 14 in the other interprovincial derby of the weekend. And a pair of tries from Greg Jones helped Ulster secure a try scoring bonus point of their own. In snooker, our lads in action, we had him on the show not only a couple of weeks ago, Cork snooker sensation Ross Bullman. He's taking on world number 14 Barry Hawkins, which is no mean feat, in a 2020 German Masters qualifying match this evening. It's getting underway from 7 o'clock. Notable winners from earlier this afternoon include Mark Selby, Judd Trump, Martin Gould and Graham Dott, who I don't understand why Mark Selby and Judd Trump were playing a qualifying game for that tournament, but there you go.
Yeah.
In darts, Keane Barry says he's determined to land a PDC Tour card after being crowned Junior World Darts Champion today. He defeated Adam Gaulis 5-3 at the Ali Pally earlier on. He'll also take on Leighton Bennett in next month's BDO World Youth Final, so definitely a youth prospect to keep an eye on there. Now in the senior game, Derry's Daryl Gurney looks to book his place in round 3 at the PDC World Darts Championship this evening. Number 6 seed is taking on Justin Pipe. While elsewhere, Fallon Sharrock, who's been making all the headlines across the papers this week, of course, she became the first woman to win a match at the tournament this week, and she's going up against Mensur Soljevic this evening. Finally for now, Rory, just a quick mention for Jack Woolley, who is Ireland's first ever Taekwondo Olympian. 21-year-old Dubliner has qualified for next year's Tokyo Olympic Games. Woolley won a European silver medal in the 58 kilo division last month, and he's now ranked 7th in the world, so congratulations to him.
Alright, thanks for that, Ryan. And it's still Leicester City 1, Manchester City 1 at the Etihad Stadium there in the report. In fact, Man City have just gone ahead. They've gone 2-1. Gundogan penalty have put City ahead there against Leicester City. So just approaching half time, Manchester City 2, Leicester City 1. We'll get you a half time report on that one in just a bit. But we're going to talk about the FAI and everything that's been happening, I suppose, this week. The FAI's future has never been more uncertain, and a lot being made about that during the week. We'll talk about that in a bit. But Ryan has been speaking to Cork City FC chairman Declan Kerry to discuss the future of football in Ireland and the potential impact that liquidation would have on the Rebel Army and the League of Ireland as a whole.
So I'm joined on the line by chairman of Cork City Football Club, Declan Kerry. Declan, obviously everyone's aware at this stage of the controversy and I suppose the uncertainty surrounding the FAI's future. But early in the week, Sports Minister Shane Ross made the comment, if the FAI goes, the League of Ireland might go with it. Is that true, Declan? And is it something that you and the club are concerned about?
Yeah, look, I suppose in the strictest sense, yes, it is true. I think everyone at our club and supporters of the League of Ireland all over the country took note of those comments and took them very seriously. So, yeah, look, we're we're very much aware of the dangers, and you know, we hope that there can be some kind of a resolution in the very near future to this, to end a lot of the, you know, speculation and you know, some of the comments that the minister did make did frighten a lot of supporters, and there's been a real reaction to it as well in the public domain. So hopefully we can see some kind of resolution to it in the near future, as I said.
Yeah, definitely. But he did go on to clarify his comments. He said that the League of Ireland, like it said, it could exist, albeit possibly in a different format, even if the FAI were to fall by the wayside. Do you think that something like the League of Ireland could bounce back from?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, look, the league at the moment, like, while you know, we are, you know, the FAI is our regulator, we've had a love-hate relationship with the FAI, I feel, over the last number of years and decades. Look, we've been denied things like commercial revenues and TV money by the FAI for a long time. We do have a very positive relationship with some departments of the FAI, like the licensing department and some of the staff there that deal directly with the league. But overall, as the FAI, I think, have just you know, done the bare minimum with the League of Ireland, so that they could maintain their, you know, national team status and UEFA status, I think, is probably the overarching theme with that one. But look, yeah, could we go ahead and restructure the league? We've had discussions with a number of entities and groups over the last year on that exact topic. This controversy with the FAI now has kind of clouded that a bit. But it may be an opportunity for us now to use this current controversy and turn it into a positive and make it strong, sustainable, and something that's viable and attractive to supporters all over the country who love football.
And do you have any idea how that would set up, Declan? Have you worked out that yet?
Yeah, I think, look, we haven't really worked it out, but there's a number of proposals, and I think the most attractive one, I would say, would be the clubs to take ownership of the league themselves and just have the national body then, the FAI, have a, like, be a stakeholder in that, similar to how the Premier League in England works. You know, the clubs are the owners of the league. They all have an equal share. They do the negotiations while they employ you know, staff to run the league, and they do the negotiations for TV money, etc., and they make sure that that's fairly distributed. And look, I think something similar. Look, we've been in battles for so long now, I think, as a league, and it's time now for everyone, I think, to, you know, to use this opportunity to try and reinvigorate things for us. And I think while the comments this week and all of the speculation is a negative, I'm sure we can do something to turn it into a positive now, and if clubs are brave enough to make the change, I think we can definitely get something done in the next 1 to 2 years.
Definitely. Now, Declan, I suppose there's a lot of speculation in the papers and kind of on social media and that about the uncertainty of the Irish international team and Euro 2020 and all that. But yeah, I believe in a club level, European competitive football, so your Champions League, Europa League, that goes if the FAI goes as well, does it?
It does, yeah. But look, the whole league in its current structure, where the FAI govern the league, you know, would go as well. So look, I think European places is you know, one of the knock-on effects of that. And look, yeah, we as I said earlier, we'd hope that somewhere between either the Irish government or UEFA, that there will it will avoid the situation where the FAI is liquidated. I think the knock-on effects of the FAI being liquidated are just unfathomable to think of. Like, you know, you're talking impacts there to five-year-olds kicking a ball on a Saturday morning all the way up to League of Ireland level. So the impacts are absolutely enormous of that happening. And, you know, if you just think about the number of volunteers and staff and coaches associated with all clubs, from, you know, junior level all the way up to senior level, it's just unquestionable to think of the impact it would have on all those. And I don't think the Irish government could let that happen. You know, there's too much at stake, and football and soccer, you know, it's a huge sport in this country. Almost, you know, I would say it's probably the most popular amongst kids as well. There's more people playing soccer than ever before, and I don't think the government should let that slide because of governance failures at such a high level within the FAI. I think, you know, we have been let down by, you know, the senior executives at the FAI and at that level, and, you know, to let that impact, you know, the guys that are out on the field coaching kids every weekend, you know, should they really suffer because of this, I would hope that the government kind of take action on it now, and, you know, if that means they take charge of it in some way as well, and, guided through this rough patch, then I think it would be a massive win for the government as well, if they were to, you know, support and help get the FAI out of this mess, clear out the guys that, you know, caused all these issues and where all the questions still lie with those individuals, and drive on then and try and recover what we have.
Yes, definitely. Now, Declan, I suppose you obviously are kind of dealing with the FAI a lot. You mentioned kind of the love-hate relationship between the FAI and the League of Ireland. Was this something that you were expecting, or did you preempt this demise or this kind of uncertainty, yeah, this financial struggle, I suppose, the FAI are having?
Yeah, look, I think the fact that, you know, as I said there, we've had that love-hate relationship with the FAI for so long now. A lot of the League of Ireland supporters would often sing chants about the FAI at games, and, you know, it's one of those, I hate to say I told you so thing, but something was always amiss, I think, and to say not surprised, it would probably be true, but to the extent it has now developed to, it has been very surprising. And look, to see it now go to the level that it is, you know, we're dusting the Oireachtas and there's such, you know, huge governance failings there, and the FAI unable to answer those questions, and now under such a spotlight and scrutiny that, you know, I wouldn't have expected, and anyone associated with the league wouldn't have expected. But look, to say we're, if you ask any you know, long-term League of Ireland supporter, are they surprised? The answer would probably be no, but to the extent, I would say yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Shane Ross has actually said, like, he's been quite verbal about the fact that he doesn't feel the FAI should be given any more of the taxpayers' money or giving any more public funding. Is that something that you would echo?
I think in the current structure, I can understand why he would say that. But look, I think if, as I said there, if there's a clear out and the government makes certain demands, if there is some kind of a semblance of a plan put together, you know, lessen the impact to clubs all over the country and volunteers and staff, and the jobs within the FAI as well, if they show that they're making a concerted effort to save that. And, you know, you're talking about football in the country, while the FAI, you know, some would say, have made a poor job at managing that over the last while. I think it's so big that you just couldn't let it die at FAI level. I think the government would definitely have to step in at some stage. And I think the comments by Shane Ross have been, you know, they've had the right reaction. Now I think there's such public spotlight on it that, you know, public will demand answers and demand solutions from the FAI, and I think that will hopefully drive it forward to get somewhere where we resolve the current issues.
And Declan, what do you think now will happen next, and I suppose what do you think should happen next to resolve the situation?
Yeah, like, I think definitely we're part of a group called the Premier Clubs Alliance, the PCA, and we hope to meet on behalf of all League of Ireland clubs with the FAI as well, first of all, and then with Sport Ireland, and hopefully with Shane Ross as well, just to, you know, explain to him the impact of what his comments did, and, you know, discuss, you know, the downstream impacts that, you know, liquidating the FAI will have. I know Jonathan O'Brien spoke very passionately about it as well yesterday in the Oireachtas, and he was a former board member of Cork City FC as well, almost 10 years ago. So look, I think we just really need to explain to him the impact that, you know, liquidating the FAI would have, and how that would impact, you know, the League of Ireland currently looks after national leagues from under 13 up to under 19. So you're talking about, like, the core teenage years there, where players are being developed, and, you know, these are the next players that will end up playing for Ireland and hopefully just to national, international tournaments. So look, I think the government will have to see that, and as well, as you said there, with the Euro is expected to take place in Dublin next year. Look, that would just be catastrophic to not have that as well, and not have the FAI be a functioning member of UEFA. That would just be catastrophic. So I don't think that is an option at this stage. And hopefully, as I said, there will be some kind of a solution.
Yeah, hopefully. I suppose just on a local level, Declan, your club, Cork City, I suppose all you can do is really prepare for the 2020 season as normal, is it?
That's it, yeah. Look, we're still ploughing on. We launched our new jersey there a couple of weeks back, and that should hopefully be in store very soon. And we're selling season tickets for next year, and Neil Fenn and Joe Gamble, our new management team, are actively out signing players, and you know, it's business as usual for us. It's a hectic period for the club, and, you know, as I said there's a number of hard working staff there trying to pull all that together, and volunteers as well helping us out on a daily basis. We'll carry on as normal, and the fixtures are due out tomorrow with the first league game expected on the 14th. So, Valentine's Day, coincidentally. Hopefully it's an omen.
Great stuff. All right, Declan Carey, chairman of Cork City FC. Thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers.
Yeah, and Cork City playing Shelburne now in that opening fixture on 14th of February. Very interesting stuff there from Declan. It's a mess, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's an absolute mess.
It's chaos.
Hearing Shane Ross talking about something he clearly doesn't know what he's talking about, saying, oh yeah, should the League of Ireland be gone as well?
Yeah.
Without even thinking it through.
Yeah, no, totally. And as you heard there, Declan completely refutes that, you know, and kind of has been saying that they've actually been talking, like, even prior to all this, about how the League of Ireland could exist without it. So, yeah, absolutely not.
Jonathan O'Brien, the Sinn Féin TD from Cork North Central, was speaking at the hearing on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And he's obviously quite passionate about Cork City. He's very passionate about League of Ireland football and Irish football as a whole. I just want to play a bit of what he had to say.
Not even as a League of Ireland fan, but as a football fan. I mean, we've had situations where League of Ireland supporters for years, including clubs, have been trying to explain exactly how the FA operates. They have ridiculed us, they've laughed at us, they threw some of us out of football grounds for trying to expose the incompetence within the organisation. We had a situation where they actually described the League of Ireland as the problem child. We were not the problem child. The FAI were the absentee fathers. And forgive me my language, because I'm angry about this. They were the absentee fathers who didn't give an absolute about the League of Ireland and continue to not care about the League of Ireland. And somebody needs to say that, because it hasn't been said vocally enough. And I apologise for my language, Chair.
Okay, well,
but
I can understand your anger.
I don't apologise for the sentiments behind it.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of League of Ireland supporters out there. There's a lot of football supporters out there, not just League of Ireland supporters, who are really angry at what's happening right now.
Yeah, he certainly summed it up there quite well, the Jonathan O'Brien. But look, the whole situation is a mess. It's not going to get any better in the short-term future. And you'd wonder where it's all going to go down the line.
Yeah, you'd wonder. I don't know, it's a bit of a conflicting one, because on the one hand, you have to say, you have to give a certain amount of time to the fact that it's 4 days from Christmas, and how many people are in homeless shelters and how many kids are waking up on Christmas Day in hotel rooms and all that. And then you're looking at the FAI, who are 60 million plus euro in debt, asking the government for more money. And you're just thinking, how does it make any more sense to give a sporting organisation more money when there's clearly other pressing issues? Now, in the interest of fairness, and Declan Carey put it quite well, the FAI and the presence of football in Ireland and I suppose with all your club level football in the country, that also employs a lot of people, and to disband that and to throw a grenade into that would cause a lot of upheaval and a lot of chaos as well. So it's a bit of a rock and hard place, really.
Yeah, certainly so. All right, half time report from the Etihad Stadium. Man City leading Leicester. Darren Stanage.
Man City 2, Leicester 1. City coming from behind to lead at the break. Vardy raced through to score the opening goal for Leicester with a very neat finish. Former Leicester man Mahrez, though, equalising with a deflected effort on 29 minutes as the host dominated, and Didi felt Sterling in the box. Up steps Ilkay Gundogan to fire home the penalty to give the host a very deserved lead at the break. But Leicester have been very dangerous on the counter. There could be more goals in this one. Man City 2, Leicester 1.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, going to talk motorcycling with Ray Casey, and up next, reaction from Corksman. Kerry.
Miss the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
All right, going to get reaction from our Cork's win over Kerry last night in the Munster Hurling League campaign. 127 to 11 points, the final score in Mallow. It was a young Cork team. Boss Kieran Kingston, happy with the workout?
Yeah, we're happy. Look, we had a very, very young team there tonight. Very inexperienced. Some lads that are not on our panel, they were just in for the night. So we have to be happy with what they were trying to do and trying to do the right things. And that's all we can ask for this time of the year. Right? So they're structure was very good, commitment was good, our effort was good, and as I say, they were trying to do the right thing, which is all we can ask for.
Yes, but we're used to the experienced players, but what did you think of the newcomers that came in?
I don't get on the road of individualising players. We talk about that in-house, but I think the collective is all is the most important thing.
127 and, is a good score.
It is a good score, yeah. And we had, I think, around 20 wides on top of that.
Yeah.
Missed a few goal chances, but we're rusty. Like, we haven't a lot done. We're only back training a few weeks. A lot of gym working done, but not a lot of hurling done. So from that point of view, I have to be happy with them, and I'm happy with a number of the fellas who, I suppose, on the panel. And I worked hard tonight and put their hand up, which is great.
That's great. That's fine for me.
You talk about the wides there, but I suppose shot selection early on, fellas are trying to make a name for themselves.
You understand that, like, any fellas are in, and they want to get on the scoreboard, and that's understandable, especially with young lads. But like, we've accounted for 40 players. We've 21 in college. And there was a number, like, the start we took off a few of them there. They were doing exams until 4:30 this evening, you know.
Yeah.
So some have six, seven exams this week. So, and most of them guys are doing exams all week. So, like, I mean, it was, I suppose, challenging for them. But at the same time, we have to be happy with the effort. Like, we came down here a few years ago and we threw in a lot of young lads. And they made their names in the Munster League, and they went on and made their names afterwards at league and championship. And we said the same to the fellas tonight, like, put your hand up, and that's what we want to do, create competition.
I suppose it's positive to get a nice fixture in before Christmas.
It is, yeah. Like, I mean, it is. I suppose this time of the year is quite difficult. It was important for us to get it in because, as I say, the Fitzgibbon Cup is starting the 12th. The same day that the final of the Munster League is scheduled for, and we have 21 players away with college playing Fitzgibbon Cup, so we need to get this game in, or otherwise the schedule just wouldn't allow it.
So you're kind of more in favour of this schedule playing December 20th and December 29th than against it?
Well, I suppose for us because we have so many students, it suits, but it mightn't suit other teams, you know. Okay, the pitch was very good tonight, and we have to compliment Mallow Groundsman and the complex, or the management here, because the pitch was excellent for given the week they've had.
Yeah.
But then, I suppose if you didn't have many students as we have on the panel, you'd probably be saying, like, we'll play it in January, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just like those lads from the 12th of February until, depending how long they go, but from the 12th of February on, I think if they were to go all the ways, we 14 them in UCC, they have 6 games in 4 weeks, you know.
Yeah. And the change to the league format, does that mean there's a bit less pressure in kind of having a 15 ready at the start of the league, you know, because you're probably not under as much pressure in terms of relegation now with the Group A and Group B, and this competition can be used more for finding players than building a starting 15 for the league?
Well, I think it's a balance between being as competitive as you can be and trying to introduce some new players who are going to be putting their hand up for jerseys. And that's why we've a panel, as we say. Like, every team is trying to find a couple new players and will challenge the guys that are there, and we will be doing no different. We'd like to be trying to keep, I suppose, the basis of your the foundation of your team, kind of have it thereabouts, but always, and in particular, as I say, because we want to have availability of the students during the first two rounds of National League, at least, anyway. That little opportunity will be there for others, but it's a bit of both.
Yeah,
it's a bit of both.
And how have your phone setting back in? Is it bigger hand than a glove again, or take
I'm
a bit
not sure. I'm not sure. But I just think, look, when you're away, you miss the course, and it's great to be back around. I enjoy it, and you have a huge passion for it, and you enjoy being around the lads, and they're a great bunch, and like, all you ask for them is that every time they go out, to be the best they can be, and be as competitive as we can be. That's all we can ask for them, and they have reacted well so far.
Yeah, that's Kieran Kingston there speaking to Dennis after last night's win for Cork over Kerry in the Munster Hurling League up in Mallow. Back underway at the Etihad, Manchester City leading Leicester City by 2-1. Mahrez and Gundogan with the goals for City, and Jamie Vardy opening the scoring with a cracking goal for Leicester. And Munster now leading Connacht 19-9, 58 minutes on the clock there. We're going to talk motorcycling now, and Ray Casey was on with us early in the year to talk about his preparations for the Isle of Man TT, the first time he competed at the event. Ray called into us today to look back on his year and to look ahead to 2020. All right, we're joined in studio by our friend Ray Casey. Ray, how are you?
I'm flying now.
Thanks very much for coming in. It's been a hectic year, I suppose, to put it mildly, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. It feels like only a couple of weeks ago when we were in here last time talking, and I was only getting ready for everything at that stage, like,
yeah.
But I said, since then we've managed to squeeze an awful lot of racing in and travelling around, so it's nice to have it all over and done with now.
The last time we were here was to preview the Isle of Man TT. How was that as an experience?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was everything. Even though we were a bit robbed, because I think it actually went on record as the worst year in the history of the TT for weather.
Yeah.
We got robbed of lots of practice and stuff like. But still, it was as a newcomer. It was just, and the experience was just unbelievable. Like, to be there as a rider this time around, yeah, compared to being there as a spectator, like, it was incredible. The track, everything I thought it was going to be. It was just a pity we didn't get more laps to get like the full whack of it. Like,
what was the weather? It was wet, was it?
Yeah, wet. I see, like, the island is so big, like, that one part we were sitting in the paddock and it was sunshine, but yeah, up the mountain could be fog, or so, like, it was very frustrating. But you're sitting in the paddock, you're looking at sunshine, you can see the beach, like, but then 12 miles away the track is underwater, or, you know, so yeah, you're getting all these reports in, like, you think you're going to get going, but then, you know, 10 minutes beforehand, then the clerk of the course is over the radio saying, lads, yeah, we're not going again. Like, it was very, very frustrating that way, but again, at the same time, like, we tried to make the most of it and enjoy it as much as we could. Like,
and to finally to ride on the track, I mean, like, yeah, it's a track you know so well, like, you know, to actually get on a bike and ride around, what was that like?
It was, like I said, when I was, like, the lead up to it was all so busy, I kind of didn't really take a whole lot in. And when we were there, it was like we were kind of just there and we were doing a job. We didn't really take it in either. But it's only since we left the Isle of Man that I'm, like, you know, taking in every now and again. I kind of get a flashback back of a certain part of the track or whatever. And I'm like, geez, yeah, that place is incredible, in fairness. Like,
was it a challenging track?
It was. It definitely proved that, like, you need to do the homework, because I'd been over there a couple of times beforehand, and I was again countless onboard, like, hours watching YouTube videos of onboards and stuff. And as soon as we done, like, the second lap, I kind of pretty much knew where I was all the time.
Yeah.
So I was happy with that. Like, that was the biggest fear, like, is that you get lost, you don't know where you are, and you go left when you should go right, and it could go badly wrong. Like, so from the second lap on, I kind of was happy that I knew where I was. And from then, it was just a case of, right, try and go a little bit quicker every time now. Let's try and go a little bit quicker. And then, obviously, it was really frustrating, because the weather kind of kept us. We'd have a run for four laps one night, and then we might ride a bike then again for 2 days.
Yeah.
So you were almost starting all over again every time you go. See, if you could have got out every night,
yeah,
you're just kind of, you know, you're topping up, like, so it's not too bad. But every time there was a 2 or 3 day break, it was really difficult to get going then again straight away, like.
So overall, like, happy with the experience?
Oh yeah, like, and we came away as the fastest newcomer out of, like, 10 lads that were there, like, so that was kind of pretty much all the best we could hope for.
Yeah.
I feel like, obviously, there's a lot, I could have given a lot more if we had more practice, and even the weather conditions that we were riding in were better, like, we had a lot of wind to deal with, and a lot of low sun and stuff in some of the nights, which was all tricky to get used to, so, but, like, next year the plan is obviously to go back again and go back on a superbike, but I feel like that, you know, I'd have a lot more to offer. I feel like the place would suit me, to be honest with you. Yeah. It's like, it's almost, as mad as it sounds, it's like almost a relaxed race compared to racing in Mondello, where it's like you're banging elbows off guys next to you and everything. At the TT, you're kind of on your own. It's kind of up to you to pick your marks and stuff. So I think it actually is a place that will really suit me. So
yeah, I was going to say, you're obviously going back next year. I mean, like, planning's obviously started.
Yeah, the planning has started. I've actually sold my 2 600cc bikes that I had for this year. And the plan is to go back on a superbike there for next year, like,
yeah,
and do the same thing as we did this year, ride here in Ireland on the superbike, and do the TT as the main goal.
Yeah. You had issues with your bikes this year. Last time you were here, your bike blew up, like, the day after.
Yeah, like,
the day after you were with us, your bike blew up, and we had a bad luck charm here, like.
When I was here talking to you, everything was going really smoothly. Like, I had a bike and
so
an engine.
Fault, is it?
Everything was in place, and, like, I hadn't ridden the bike yet, and then we went to Spain for a pre-season test.
Yeah.
And I rode the bike for one day, just running it in, because it was a brand new engine. And we went to go on track the second day, and on the second lap, the engine seized. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, so I was kind of stuck out in Spain with no bike for a few days. But when we came home, we had to take one engine out and get that looked at and see why it went wrong. Mm-hmm. And we put in the spare engine. The spare engine I had, there was a problem with that. I'd missed another 2 days of testing in Mondello. It was coming really close to the first round of the Mondello Masters Championship, and I'd only done one day in the bike in Spain.
Yeah.
And that was literally running in the bike. I wasn't even up to speed, so I kind of started to panic a little bit. So in the end, we just decided, like, right, we're going to have to buy a bike. Like, so I had to ring a guy in Northern Ireland that wasn't even selling his bike, and basically, like, beg him, like, you know, like, tell him. So eventually he sold it, and it turned out it was a very similar bike to my own, so there wasn't much of a transition.
Yeah.
Like, so we bought it the Wednesday, and I was racing it Saturday and Sunday, the first round of the championship in Mondello, like, so. But as soon as I got on it, I was like, it was better than the bike that I had, so
yeah.
I was happy enough, like, that we were going to be back on track, like. But it was a big blow to the budget, obviously, like.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
That before we even got to the team.
You must have been cursing your luck, like, you know.
Yeah. Outlook, again, I was trying to always look on the positive that, like, that it wasn't happening at the Isle of Man, you know, that we got all the hassle out of the way when we were at the Isle of Man, like, so that was the one positive I had to try and take out of it.
And speaking of Mondello, you'd won the most spectacular crashes I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks after the TT. Like, I spent like all of last year worrying about like what could happen at the Isle of Man, and like, you know, just get back from there safe. And you kind of forget that when you're in Mondello, like, accidents can happen really quick as well. And like that crash, that was I don't even know how to explain.
There's a photograph of it. It looks absolutely terrifying.
That actually was one of the other riders in my race. His mother was holding out like a pit board, you know, the pit board's she was holding out a pit board for him to read when I came around, because he was like just behind me. And what I don't know how she did it, but she like sat up on the wall to put it out, and she got it out way further than everybody else.
Yeah.
And I hit the board with my brake lever, and it locked my brake on it was like 120 miles an hour, to the bike just stopped. Like, so
I didn't flying over that.
Yeah, I was straight through the screen. Like, to be fair, I didn't really know what was happening until I was standing up again. I was like, I didn't really know what had happened. Like, I just felt a bang, and then the bike just stopped. So it was only afterwards I discovered what actually had happened. Like, so.
Were you angry?
Oh yeah, yeah. I thought my bike was wrecked. Like, and I knew I was lucky that I didn't get ridden over, because it was the first lap of the race. So like, there was like 20 bikes behind me. I was leading. There was 20 bikes behind me, and I could hear them like zipping past as I was sliding on the floor. Like, so everyone was really lucky. Like, even like his mother was lucky that she didn't get pulled over the wall with the board. I pulled the board out of her hand. There was an ambulance man standing next to it. He nearly got hit by the board. Like, so there was a few. There was a bit of an inquiry into how that actually happened and stuff, like, so.
You must have been terrified, though. Like.
Well, again, it was like...
I know you don't remember it like it was like.
It was over before I knew it. Again, I had no injury. Like, I had one bruise on my back, which, like, I don't really know how... I managed to kind of stay sliding down the centre of the road.
That's
which
incredible.
Is, which is the big trick, like, don't get hit by anything or don't hit anything yourself, like. So, but, like I said, it was over, kind of. I thought it had ruined the championship, to be honest with you, because I thought my bike was ruined. Like.
Yeah.
So I had to ring Cahill, one of my mechanics, who wasn't with me that weekend, and he had my spare bike, and he's living in Waterford. Like, so he had to bring that up like late at night, like, and we'd done a bit of switching around, and I had to ride it the next day. And I was a bit nervous getting on the bike in the next day, like,
cause
it was raining, and we managed, like, I don't know, fifth and sixth or something on the Sunday. Like, it's kind of just a day like that you just need to salvage what you can out of the day, like, and then just forget about it then for the next week. Like, so.
You sound like you're a very lucky boy, right?
Yeah, that was. It could have been a lot worse, but sure, look, it wasn't, thankfully, so I can't anymore.
Racing closer to home, the Glanmire Road Races were back this year, and a huge, massive success, apparently.
Yeah, it was great. Like, that was probably the most nervous I was going into any race this year, because, like, you know, so close to home.
Yeah,
I almost expected to race. Like, you know, there was a lot of people I knew that were coming down to watch it that, like, probably would. Mondello's the closest I'll ever be to a race in Cork, like, so. And I knew the track as well. Like, I knew them roads because I could try and grow up around that area. Like, so it was nice to be very high. I stayed in my mother's house. Like, I was like 3 minutes drive from the track, which is so unusual. Like, yeah, Saturday was a washout with the rain. And then on Sunday, like, they were lucky that the weather changed, and there was huge crowds. They're probably the biggest crowds I've ever seen at a national road. It's like, so just goes to show the interest is here for it. Like, you know, I think all the council and Glanmire and everything are all thrilled with how everything went. Like, so it's coming back next year, and they're after giving them a better date in June as well. It was in August, so it's after being brought forward to try and give it a bit more support. Like, so I'm really looking forward to that. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, racing in front of like all the Cork people, I suppose, must be a special thrill.
Yeah, it was, and it was only, again, when you're racing, you kind of don't, you're kind of busy, you don't really take a whole pile in, but on the last lap of the grand final, I had, like, one of the lads put out my pit board, and I had, like, a 4 second gap over the guy in fourth, so I knew I was pretty comfortable on the last lap, so I was able to kind of just have a little look around and see, you know, to take stuff in, like, and I couldn't believe the crowd that was there, to be honest, like, because I've done a couple of national road races, and I was excited going around, like, you know, and again, being the local boy from Cork, like, I was getting a lot of support, so it was great. It actually was probably my favourite event of the year.
Yeah, what about the other riders? Were they happy with Edward thing?
Oh, yeah, like, everyone was delighted with the event, you see. I think because it was a new road race, they kind of slotted the date in at the end of a steady run of road races. Yeah. Like, you know, so it was like the seventh of seven in a row of road races. So the entries and stuff were a little bit low. Like, but now I think all the riders that were there and the feedback that went back to everybody was
the buzz,
like,
yeah.
And the buzz that was there, like, I think in June, like, it's probably going to be the best national road race that will happen next year. Mm. Like.
Well, so what's your plan so for next year? Obviously, the Isle of Man TT is kind of the main focus, is it?
Yeah, well, I'm bikeless at the minute. So that's the next thing now is to decide. We're kind of trying to do a deal here with Carey's in Little Island, yeah, for Motorrad for a BMW, which is the bike I want to be on. Yeah. Obviously, it's the game changer of a BMW. It's what everyone else is on. At least you know you're going in on the same as everyone else.
So this bike's obviously best of the best, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a game changer. Like, it's got everything in it. Like any like electronic, it's like a little Formula One bike, really. Yeah. You know, so it's that's the plan, is to try and get one of them. They're a bit late in production, so
yeah,
it's going to be cutting it tight to get a road bike and have it converted into a race bike for, like, early next year. Like,
is
so,
there much a job to have to be done to convert them into race bikes?
There's a lot of time involved in it, like, you know, so especially when, because it's a brand new bike, there's a lot of parts still not available for them.
So you're not just taking it off the shelf and going
to
race?
No, just like, yeah, they built this bike from the ground up, like, so, you know, the stuff is only starting to kind of filter through now. So, like, obviously you'll have your factory riders will get, they'll get first preference, like, and then all the BMW team riders, and then it'll slowly start to filter down.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, there's other options out there. The Kawasaki and the Yamahas are all good as well. Like, but BMW is where we want to be at, and that's what we're aiming for now. Like, but I'm not really in any panic. I'll wait till maybe the end of January, and once I'm ready to go by kind of March, like, I know I'm going to be racing. I know I'm going to be on a big bike, so I can just prepare as normal for that. Like, you know, whether it's a Kawasaki or a BMW. It doesn't really matter. Like, you know, I know I'm going to be on a 1,000cc bike, so yeah. I can train. We've already started back training with Tom and Fota, like, so back training with the last 2 months already. Like, so we're just going to get ready as best we can, and like, a bike is a bike, we'll get one somewhere from somehow. Like,
have you set goals for next year? Have you set targets in mind?
Like, this year winning the Masters Championship, obviously at the end of the whole season, was a great achievement. Like, you know, it was a nice icing on the cake. Like, I kind of had something I overlooked really at the start of the year, because everything was focused on the TT, and as soon as the TT was over, kind of, we needed a new goal. So the Masters Championship, we concentrated on that, and then we wrapped that up with the last round. So obviously next year I'd like to go in there and do that maybe again on the Superbike, and just go to the TT, like, and see how we're fixed again. Like.
Excellent, Ray. Thanks very much for coming in. I'm looking forward to tracking your progress next year. And happy Christmas, buddy.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah, it's Ray Casey there talking about his year competing at the Isle of Man TT, which was a goal of his for quite a long time. Got to achieve that, fantastic. But just hearing him describe in detail the crash that happened at Mondello was absolutely terrifying.
It's unbelievable. Like you say just there a minute ago, like, fearlessness, complete fearlessness of the road, getting back on the bike when something like that happens.
He was like, yeah, I was slightly nervous, and I was like, if that happened to me, I don't think I'd even look at a bike ever again.
Oh, stop. Like, he was describing it, and he was so cool and calm, and I suppose that probably helps him when he's actually riding then as well. You could hear there in his voice, like, how, like, kind of he takes everything in, and how kind of, like, he doesn't really break out in a sweat or anything like that. Like, it's obviously helps him when he's actually riding, but I couldn't believe it when he said that. Slightly nervous getting back
slightly
on the bike.
Slightly nervous, yeah. It's incredible. But, yeah, fantastic stuff from Ray. He's back at the Isle of Man TT next year, so we'll have Ray on again
If his bike breaks again after having been on today, Roar, I think that's the last time we'll be getting him in here.
I think the Big Red Bench is a bad luck term for Ray, all right, yeah. So, yeah, great to have Ray in, has to be said. All right, I'm going to talk darts briefly. Keen Barry says he's determined to land a PDC Tour card after being crowned the Junior World Darts Champion. He defeated Adam Gawless 5-3 at Ali Pally today. He'll take on Leighton Bennett in next month's BDO World Youth Final. And this is him talking about becoming the World Junior Darts Champion.
Congratulations, you're holding the Tommy Cox Trophy. You've won the Scott Farms International JDC Junior World Championship title. You're now a world champion in your sport. How does that feel?
It's amazing, really. It's kind of everything I dream of, to be a world champion. And last year, like, to do it and to get the win, it's amazing. So that'd be amazing feeling.
It's been a pretty whirlwind 6 months for you, getting into the World Championship, getting into this. What can you just explain kind of what it's been like for you?
It's been very busy, but very enjoyable as well. Because everything's going right for me, and I'm playing really good darts. So, and it's a kind of hard work, and it's starting to pay off.
It's Keane Barry there. Apologies there for the quality of that audio. Going to talk briefly about Rory Best. We kind of mentioned it earlier on today, and I think you had it in your sports news today. Comments that he made following the World Cup, where he said that there was too much detail from the coaching team, which people obviously took as an attack or criticism on Joe Schmidt. He was been speaking on Air Sport about those comments.
Headlines a few weeks ago, obviously there was some great honesty coming out of you. You spoke about maybe what went wrong, maybe you talked about as yourself as a captain. What, as time has gone on, have you reflected on that?
Good, a nice handy one, Tommy, thanks.
Under the bus.
I think what really frustrated me was the actual headlines. I think when you read what was written in the article, and my, it was more a sort of what my feelings were, and people want answers in the World Cup, and you're talking in hindsight, and I felt as a player group, and obviously me being the captain of that group, is that we could have done more, that we should have taken more responsibility, and that was my point, and people sort of put headlines on that, yeah, they say weren't reflective. And I think anyone that knows me and my feelings towards Joe and how tight we've been over the last certainly nearly 4 years as captain know that, like, he's the best coach I've ever worked with. I think he's one of the best coaches in the world. And I just felt a wee bit let down that it looked like I threw him under the bus, because that was never my intention. Like I say, we did everything that we felt was right. And I was just looking back and trying to reflect on a bit of hindsight. And I was just a bit annoyed that was the way it was portrayed, because, like I say, people have forgotten what Joe has done.
So Rory certainly rowing back a little bit there on his comments that he made that were taken as a criticism of Joe Schmidt, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's the time we're living in, I suppose. Anything that's said is automatically a headline generated for clicks and all that kind of crack.
Absolutely. It may have been a slight criticism. It may have been a little bit critical. But people just, like you say, they jump on the bandwagon. As soon as they hear too much, like, quote, yeah, too much anything, so too much detail then is obviously misconstrued as, oh, he's slamming Schmidt, and he's slamming, you know? And like, you'll see all the clickbaity things, then it's just like, oh, listen to what he had to say and all this. It's all rubbish, you know, it's all rubbish.
Yeah, fair play to him for coming out and saying that last night as well. But yeah, that was his comments on Joe Schmidt, and certainly getting taken and blown up, and as Rory said himself, getting blown out of proportion. All right, just get you updated on a couple of scores. Liverpool still scoreless in the big one, the FIFA Club World Cup final against Flamengo. 66 minutes on the clock there. Manchester City are taking on Leicester City. It is Man City leading by 2-1. 67 minutes on the clock there. Elsewhere, Munster are currently in action away to Connacht, and the latest score from there, it's Connacht 14, Munster 19, 5 minutes there for Munster to hang on and get the win in what will be a very hard fought game. But certainly looking okay there with 5 minutes to go. All right, coming up on the Big Red Bench tomorrow from 6 p.m. we're going to be talking to race driver Luca Allen. He was in earlier on this week. He won the Formula 4 World Championship last week, which is an incredible achievement, and he certainly has a huge future ahead of him, so we'll be doing that. I'm still debating whether or not we can get away with playing an hour of Christmas songs.
Oh, let's.
If the boss is listening, might text us. The Big Red Bench Christmas Classics.
Oh, let's take the chance. I think we should take the chance.
We mightn't even play them. We might just do a cappella versions of our own one, which I think would sound great.
We have lovely voices, Roy. We're always singing.
I have a beautiful singing voice, very like Celine Dion. So we might get away with that. We'll see how that goes tomorrow. So that'll be on the show as well. And we'll have plenty more stuff as well. All right, we're pretty much out of time. Thank you very much indeed for tuning our way this evening on this final Saturday before the big man comes on Wednesday. We're back tomorrow from 6 p.m. If you want to get in touch with us, you can follow us on Twitter at Big Red Bench, and our podcast will be online tonight, redfm.ie and redextra.ie, and from wherever you get your podcast from. We'll have tonight's interviews with Declan Carey, Kieran Kingston, and Ray Casey, on the podcast this evening. All right, we're out of time. Stevie's up next. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday night, folks, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at 6.
The The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.